You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Wednesday, September 7th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here as well, and we are both in mourning over what appears to be the end of the Milwaukee Brewers season, because we both called it a night with the Brewers up big, 6-1, up 6-1 in the eighth inning, and somehow lost 10-7 in extra innings as the bullpen just imploded. And that's it, folks. We just spent the last hour talking about why we can't get optimistic about the Packer season. We are spending a lot of time talking about unhappy voters in election season. We need something to boost us. Oh, hey, Kristen Lierley is going to be here from 9:30 onward to brighten our day, boost our spirits. So we got that going for us.
And Wisconsin's best professional sports team in the state begins their season on October 20th. So that's something else to look forward to. About 90 days away from that.
You're referring to the Milwaukee Bucks.
I am, because okay. You know the best. They most recently have won the entire thing.
I was gonna say, the ones who have won something. Yes.
And I mean, I think with Giannis, Chris, and Drew, they're going to continue to be contenders every single year that we have that core three. So that is the season that I am looking forward to most. I think I may be maybe no longer trying to cheer as hard for the Brewers right now, because it just seems
it's unfortunate.
It's very tough right now.
New at upnorthnewswi.com. You may recall it was 1 week ago, right about now, that Kevin Revelinsky joined us, freelance writer, to talk about what to do with all that zucchini coming out of your garden or that neighbors are leaving on your doorstep. I asked him if he wouldn't mind writing an article about it, maybe include a recipe. And he did just that. So we posted that this morning. All kinds of great photos and great ideas for various dishes that you can make with the tomatoes, the zucchini. And if you grow herbs, if you got an herb garden, all kinds of things to do with that as well. So, you know, take a look at that. Before I forget, let me remind you that if you're listening on the radio at Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, or any place else, we want you to know there's another way to catch us live weekdays from 8 to 11. That's on the TuneIn app or tunein.com. And just look for WXCO, Bull Falls Radio. And of course, our show each hour is turned into a separate podcast to find on Apple and Spotify. Our address here, email, is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. But I also want to put out there for you photos@upnorthnewswi.com. Not so much for the radio show, but for the website and for the newsletter, because, and I see I'm already a week late on this, but at the end of every month, I try to put up the daily photos from our newsletter into one gallery on Instagram or Facebook. And we had some amazing photos come in August. We've got a few in the hopper now. Wouldn't mind some more. So if you've got a nice picture of Wisconsin scenery, send that to photos@upnorthnewswi.com. I want to take just a moment to look at an article in the Journal Sentinel today by the great Craig Gilbert. This one, he does an amazing job of breaking down historical data. A lot of times it's based on the Marquette poll, but it's also based on several other sources, and really helps put things in perspective, especially after an election. This one doesn't shed a whole lot of new light. It's simply worth noting again that there are similarities between this gubernatorial election and the one in 2018. You know, he notes that 4 years ago, the person who was governor of Wisconsin was clinging to a small lead over his lesser known challenger, and Scott Walker lost. This time it's Tony Evers who finds himself in a similar position to Tim Michaels. Like Walker 4 years ago, Evers' approval ratings are marginally positive with a small lead over his opponent. But in both cases, Trump and Biden, you're dealing with a president who is dogged by negative job ratings. Okay, that is all true. And he notes some of the, you know, the other similarities that have come into play. But thankfully, he notes some differences as well, and really breaks down where it was that Walker went wrong and how Evers, you know, could be different. In the summer of 2018, more than half the voters, 52%, said Wisconsin was going in the right direction. And actually, that number had risen to 55% till just before the election. But while 55% of the voters were happy with where the state was headed, only 48% of those turned out to be people who supported Scott Walker. That means there were there was a critical faction of the electorate who was satisfied with conditions, but they were ready to turn the page on Scott Walker after 8 years. The differences this time around include a darker public mood, an economy that had been marked by high inflation, a super tight job market, the pandemic, of course, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and then Donald Trump's role in all of it. You would think that's bad news for Tony Evers. Only 36% of the state says the state is headed in the right direction. But Evers' approval is at 47%, higher than the right track number. In part because a lot of that frustration, as I've said before, isn't directed at Evers. A lot of people saying the state is on the wrong track are frustrated with Republicans instead. We'll get into some more of the differences in our next segment and some new numbers that indicate the way that things may go against conventional wisdom across the country in this fall's elections. This is Up North News. We'll be back. Welcome back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Wrightlow. We were talking before the break about similarities and differences in this year's election for governor versus the one 4 years ago when Tony Evers unseated Scott Walker. And as Craig Gilbert was writing in the Journal Sentinel, their overall approval ratings in 2018 to 2022 are virtually identical, but they got there in different ways. And Gilbert notes that, you know, Scott Walker's numbers were built much more on his base, his partisan base. You have to look at the independents every time there's a poll, and especially in Wisconsin, because here you don't register to vote by party like in a lot of states. You don't do that. So when people answer these poll questions, they are self-described independents. And that number can swing quite a bit, but pay attention to it. In the summer of 2018, Scott Walker had a negative job rating among independents. Right now, Tony Evers has a positive job rating among independents. And Luke, you pointed out rightly, and I don't know that I saw it in Craig's polling or story about the polling, but you know, there was another advantage that Tony Evers had and still enjoys.
Yeah, I believe in 2018, that would have been the third time that Tony Evers' name was on a statewide ballot. I believe he was first elected to be DPI secretary, the Secretary of Public Instruction here in Wisconsin in 2015. Again in 13. 13, 17, and then for governor in 18. And so it was the third time that he was on a statewide ballot. Tim Michaels has been on a statewide ballot in the past.
One time. 18 years ago.
So I think the piece does kind of at least not, it diminishes the value that there is in name recognition and the likelihood of Wisconsin voters to go with the voter or go with the candidate they know. Because that's a huge part of what it is.
The guy that they know, the candidate, does not have to be boisterous or flashy or anything like that. I mean, Tim Michaels is trying to be boisterous. But this is a state that voted, as you note, for Tony Evers multiple times for different statewide offices. And prior to that, voted for Jim Doyle. Again, not going to be accused by anybody of being a lightning bug of activity.
But no, I don't think that's going to be the label anybody's going to use.
Look, I'm saying I know the guy. He would be the first to agree with this, and you know there's still a place in life for people in public service who just want to get the job done.
And it's a little shocking to me, Pat, that electability gets thrown out for a certain set of candidates, primarily candidates of color and women. Are they electable? Are they electable? And yes. And why is that not discussed a little bit more for Tim Michaels, who has lost statewide, lost in a state Senate race? And the question of electability should be out there, but it's just not, frankly. And so I think that goes into the same categorization of if you're going to downplay the fact that Evers has won three statewide elections before and then not talk about electability for a man that's tried and failed, I guess that's just something that I think should be included in an analysis piece like this.
And remember, part of his trying and failing to beat Russ Feingold in 2004 had to do with his position on abortion. It was very extreme, even for that time. And we've talked about it on the radio show once before, but worth noting that he would go much further than the current ban, which was written in 1849. He has answered questionnaires to the effect that you know, would put contraceptive processes in place of potentially being banned, in vitro fertilization, that pregnancy or that life begins at fertilization, which again has no medical basis whatsoever if you know anything about human reproductive biology. And it is that issue there that could really turn the corner. And so I'll transition from the Craig Gilbert piece into some of the national polling. And again, this is national polling, kind of generic of who would you want to represent you in Congress, a Republican or a Democrat. And looking at a note from Tom Bonier here, who is the CEO of Target Smart, which is a Democratic data firm and polling firm, he notes the obvious. Dobbs changed everything. Dobbs is the Supreme Court decision that repealed Roe v. Wade and abortion rights. But then he notes, you layer on top of that the January 6th hearings, Biden's Inflation Reduction Act and all the benefits that's going to bring. Gas prices continue dropping. Trump still being seen as the leader of the Republican Party, the Republican Party putting forward far-right candidates, student loan debt forgiveness. You see all that, and it shouldn't surprise you that more polls on the generic ballot have Democrats no longer trailing Republicans, and in fact, up on average about 4.5 points. And so another data analyst jumped onto that same thread and put up a few more posts that note the shift. It's as much of a 6-point shift. And again, it's those independent voters that we're talking about who are looking at the current landscape. They don't remember 2018. They don't care about 2018, and rightly so. You vote based on the here and now. And what people see in the here and now is led them to a generic ballot with, again, a 6-point swing is immense. And don't forget, Democrats have overperformed their 2020 numbers in the 5 different special elections to congressional seats since the Dobbs decision. So what you see is what this other analyst calls a MAGA hangover, and goes through all the races where things are tighter than they otherwise would be. And again, let's acknowledge their bias in all of this, but they don't see why you don't refer to this cycle as newer and bluer. Because of circumstances that are showing the Republicans to continue to be as far right as they are as a political class. And I want to emphasize that as a political class, there are countless Republican and Republican leaning voters who don't agree with this, who still don't know that they can bring themselves to vote for a Democrat. They might just stay home instead. But they are not out there calling for riots in the streets if Donald Trump is indicted for mishandling, stealing, maybe doing worse with top secret information. They think it's garbage. It's not, but they're not running out to a microphone to say so, the way, say, a Liz Cheney is. But when a pollster asks them how they're feeling about things, especially the ones who are closer to independent than Republican, you know, they're looking at all this and saying that
the Republican candidate, generically at least, is less likely to get their support than they were earlier in the year.
And the hard part with that generics is like looking at all of these races. When you try to give that top-down approach, make it a generic, wash away all of the details, because really it comes into the specifics as well, though. There's not a whole lot of people that are just going into a voting booth and saying, well, generically speaking, this is where I'm feeling right now. It does come down to specifics. And so there's a lot of this that it's great to be able to talk about it this far out, but in a lot of senses, voters aren't thinking generically. They're thinking about the options that they have, when people are calling for pitchforks and torches over media coverage, it's not even whether or not there would be indictment of a former president that would get them out to the streets. We have a candidate here in Wisconsin that's calling for that because he doesn't like the way that the news outlets are reporting on contributions his private foundation made, small fortunes of donations that have been made by his foundation. It's the bar is pretty low for what they're trying to drum up outrage around here in Wisconsin.
They are. And again, it's outrage that they're hope there's a couple of things. Flood the zone, you know, or muddy the waters, whatever metaphor you want to use. Get people feeling like, oh, my vote doesn't count. You know, my vote doesn't matter. Or the both sides-ism. Oh, they're both terrible, so I'm not going to vote for them. That often works, but it's so much less likely to this time because of these concrete things that we just described point by point by point that have voters looking at not only the far right positions and rhetoric that are out there, but also the very tangible things that have been done. For all of the wailing and gnashing of teeth about, you know, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, there is a record there of legislative victories and benefits coming soon to a neighborhood near you that is undeniable, that is historic in its nature. And so if Democratic candidates don't get knocked off message about that and get dragged into, you know, some of the more silly mudslinging, there's reason why pollsters see that they may be doing better than expected. It is that time of year again when certain politicians are also going to take a stance on another issue entirely that is long overdue to be addressed, probably won't be fixed this year either, but it's not stopping Tammy Baldwin from putting forth the Go Pack Go Act that tries to make sure once again that everybody in Wisconsin can watch the Green Bay Packers on TV. This is something near and dear to my heart here in Western Wisconsin, but in central Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, it may not be quite as obvious, depending on where you are.
As I say, are you in one of the 15 counties?
I'm very close to it.
Okay.
And I say this from the perspective of somebody who anchored the news in Eau Claire for about a decade on, you know, the biggest stick out there, the biggest TV station, the biggest reach, and yet right next door to us in Dunn County, and next door to that in St. Croix County, we were not counted in the ratings because those counties at the time were still considered part of the Twin Cities TV market. And as a result, on cable systems and such, you'll see Minnesota Vikings football games instead of Green Bay Packers football games.
That's the worst.
It's got to be brutal. And the same is probably said for the folks who have the Marquette, Michigan TV market, or Duluth for that matter. And, you know, Tammy Baldwin has perpetually introduced a bill that would try to make sure that, you know, Wisconsinites could be able to access Packers games and not be forced to watch TV from a market that is across state lines. It makes total sense. And it's not just sports. I feel the frustration in news/politics. First in news, people in Dunn County, St. Croix County, Pierce, Pepin, Burnett, they are wanting Wisconsin news so bad. They're not all Twin Cities residents who built a McMansion near the river. These are Wisconsin residents. They're Packer fans. They vote in Wisconsin elections. And all they get is Minnesota news, Minnesota politics. And it's not just news. It is, you know, the political ads. They see nothing but political ads from Minnesota candidates. They probably don't care if they see Wisconsin political ads.
but they would like to see Wisconsin's football team on Sundays. We'll be back with a visit from Dr. Kristen Lyerly coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
As always, we'll either save Yacht Rock or something from the appropriate age for our weekly visit with Dr. Kristen Lyerly.
I love it.
Fellow oldies aficionado. How are you?
I'm so good, Pat. How are you?
Oh, I've had better days. You know that, but... You know, from my being married to an OBGYN and talking to my own doctor as well, there's times when you're only partly talking about physical health histories and things like that. And sometimes you just got to have somebody to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm sure your patients, you must get yelled at sometimes because, you know, a lot of these clinics, they're trying to get people to see, like, you know, 30 patients a day. And I would imagine that in a clinical setting, you probably go through about four and you just have, you know, you go and get them a cup of coffee and, you know, eventually we get down to, you know, business, but
it's the best part of my job. It's the whole reason you go into it. Like, you know, the physical exam stuff, all of that is really important. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing is that holistic piece. And you don't get that unless you can really sit down and have a conversation and really give it the time, give your visit the time to be able to get to that thing that you really want to talk about and solve that problem that really needs to be solved.
Boy, we keep coming back to that whole notion of conversations. We had Lou Ann Bird on yesterday. Have you met her?
Mm-mm.
Candidate for 84th Assembly?
Mm-mm.
Grandma Lou? What a firecracker. Wow. And I mean, you talk about, I'm not saying that, you know, that Barack Obama is going to be, you know, out of a job, but she's your hopey changey person. I mean, she brought up hope and change a number of times. My point being, she too got into that whole notion of, if we could just have some more conversation. She talked about a conversation where she flipped a Trump supporter after they talked for a while. And again, we've said that with other guests, it's the value of those conversations. If we could get more of that between voters and candidates or people of different backgrounds, there's so much more we could be doing, more we could be getting done and better we could all feel.
It's really true. We miss that connection. And I think COVID really divided us because it kept us in our corners. And people of our generation, Pat, we don't know how to use electronic and social media the way that the kids do. So when I look at my kids and how they communicate, my four boys, when they're all over the place, they're still talking on Discord and they're still chatting and they're telling me about what each other are doing. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm the mom. I'm supposed to know what's happening. No. But, you know, they've got their community that they grew up with this level of communication. So we're the ones who haven't learned to adapt our communication style, and COVID really unroofed that. But now that we're able to get back together again, I think this is the time that we're needing to have these conversations and to build that community and that unity and that hope that people are desperate for.
I hope so. I really hope that conversation doesn't become a lost art when everybody's talking to each other through two thumbs. Because one of the things you said that kind of scares me is that, you know, we don't understand some of the new platforms, the new technology. And so you know how keen we are about how easy it is to slip in misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And so will that online communication, will it be fact-based? First of all, will there be room for people to challenge one another in a civil manner rather than just flaming each other in the comment sections of anything? And I don't know if that's being done, and I don't know who is in charge of, you know, trying to be the hopey changey person for, you know, the next generation's online comments. But I'll tell you, misinformation, there's one thing to have all the trolls, you know, and people, all the insults and everything. that's fine. That's going to be a part of it. For me, it's goes a step before that, and it's the misinformation and outright disinformation that I worry can get even more traction than it already could on talk radio and cable TV.
Yeah, you're right. But I think too, it's a generational approach. I think those of us who grew up with a certain way of communicating are really having a difficult time as communication and misinformation is seeping in through pathways that we don't really understand. And when I look at how my kids deal with these kinds of things, it's very different. And Luke, feel free to pitch in at any point here, because you're kind of like,
he's just laughing whenever you mention kids. He gets this stupid smile on his face as if he thinks he's 12 when he's, you know, he's getting to be an old man himself.
I'm a homeowner. I'm all of these different things now. I laugh because, yeah, I think I do get grouped in into the kids aspect for when a lot of people are talking about this, but really I'm not a kid, but no, yeah, I mean,
you're not.
Yes. I think I got my first iPhone when I was, I don't know, 14, 15 years old. So the fact that that was what I just grew up with, it's almost second nature. And so the different options, I always feel like I'm on the back end of a lot of the trends. Like TikTok, I probably will not ever download it because I don't have any interest in it. But like even things like Snapchat and Venmo, when Venmo first came out, I wasn't using it. And some of my friends were, and I was just referred to as grandpa because I was going to the ATM and getting cash out to like pay people back for buying drinks and stuff like that. And now it's all automated transactions on your phone through an app. And it's pretty wild how things work now. But the communication, there is a dying art, though, because you can see some people are very good at communicating on their devices. But then when you try to talk to them face to face, some people in the younger generation just have a harder time doing that. And so there is kind of a sweet spot right now, I think, of about maybe 25, 26 year olds to 35, 38 year olds that can do both because they were kind of both in both realms there. But it is interesting to see the dynamics of how communication
works. Listen to this,
Kristen.
Not 2 minutes ago, we were referring to him as a kid, and now he's gone full circle or all the way around to being a grandpa. And those kids can't talk nowadays.
I'm agreeing with you.
I'm seeing so many similarities here between the two of you. This is beautiful. Keep talking, Luke.
He thinks it's funny because I could usually come up with the song selections that fit just like this one-on-one. I had no idea this is where we were going, but I was like Hall & Oates, a little Yacht Rock, Kristen here, and one-on-one conversations. There it is.
He is kind of the generational whisperer over here.
You know, but let's not forget that think of all of the technology that changed really when the iPhone came out. So, Luke, you're kind of at the older end of that group. But people who their consciousness didn't start until after this technology was already here. So you saw the transition, even though you were young. But like, I look at my 13-year-old, who, by the way, is Junior Pat Kreitlow. I am convinced, but we're going to get into that later. So I look at my 13-year-old and his entire paradigm is completely different from mine because he's always had that technology. I like to talk to him about things like encyclopedias and the Dewey Decimal System because that is like dinosaurs to him.
Do you know what I have down in my basement? What's down there right now may be the last set of encyclopedias ever sold, because at some point when my daughters were probably in middle school, I just remembered how I loved the best gift I ever got. One of my grandmas bought me World Book Encyclopedia set, probably when I was about, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. And that was my world. That was my baseball diamond. That was my violin lessons. That was my whatever pursuit. That was it. I could not get enough of that. Loved it. And that was my internet, you know? And I kind of thought maybe one or both daughters would enjoy that as well, going through it. I could still sell that as brand new, you know? It would obviously with a little bit of dated information, but yeah, I think I might have been the last person to buy a set of encyclopedias, and they're just sitting there now because, again, you've got this technology that puts it all in your hand for good and bad. You get good information, but you also get misinformation. You can have conversations with people that used to be far away and you'd have to write letters, but you can also trade insults with somebody that you've never met yet. You can take the most beautiful photos, as I talked about a few minutes ago, for our newsletter. And you can also take photos where I'm just going to say, I'm so glad there weren't camera phones when I was younger. I feel bad for people. I feel bad for the first group of people that had to run for office and realize that there was stuff from their teen or college years that they had said or posted or whatever. I actually think we're moving into a realm now. I mean, remember how I think when Bill Clinton was first elected, one of his cabinet nominees had to withdraw because she had maybe once smoked pot or something. I think now it's going to be like, oh yeah, I sent nudes when I was in college. You know, what are you going to do? I was young back then. I mean, it's just different. It's just so different.
It's so totally different.
I've had a Twitter account since I was like 16 or 17 years old. And so every stream of consciousness that I ever wanted from 16 to 25 or whatever you were, starting my professional career, is out there on the internet. It just exists. And so sometimes you get reminders and stuff, or like the memory apps will pop up and be like, you tweeted this out 10 years ago. And I'm like, why did I do that? And it exists and is out there because we all, and my parents were pretty good about really instilling the fact that anytime you put anything on the internet, it's for forever. And so there's still, I was very safe and everything like that, making sure that stuff doesn't get out, that you didn't put up anything that you don't want out there. But there's other people out there with those devices as well. So if you're doing, like, there was somebody in my high school got a scholarship revoked because there was a photo of them with a red Solo cup in their hand, and they couldn't prove that it wasn't beer. But oh, wow. And so it's stuff like that happened in my generation where you had to be careful because there were smartphones everywhere and people could take photos of you even without your consent and put it online.
And the thing is, now in the era of deep fakes, you know, in Photoshop, they don't even have to be real photos. Somebody can alter a photo and make you look like, you know, you did something that you weren't doing. It's I don't envy your boys at all, Kristen, for, you know, the downside of the technology that they enjoy by and large.
But they've grown up with this, and this is what they're used to, and this is what their cohort is used to. So they're going to be much better at dealing with it than we are, because we had to adapt to it. But hey, can we talk about?
But did the boys make it to school? What I want to know is, did you remember? Did they go on Friday before you left for Clear Lake?
They did. We swung by and picked them up and headed out towards your direction, and they were all just in a flurry of conversation about their first day of school that they did indeed attend.
Okay. Good. I'm glad. How was Clear Lake?
Clear Lake is beautiful. It's, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half north of Eau Claire. It's in northwestern Wisconsin. There's not a lot of stuff up there. It's maybe an hour east of St. Paul, but just beautiful country. There are about 1,100 people in this little town, and the village
did
park.
Did they give you a look like you came up here as a tourist? Because
they were like, you're from Green Bay, because everybody was from the area, and we're staying in this little village park. But the park was perfect. It was small. The lake was excellent. We went swimming and fishing and biked around. There's a great bike trail. So we went to Amory and got some brews in Amory, and all the way out to St. Croix Falls and got some brews out there. And there's this place, Sawmill Pizza, that's only open on Sundays between 12 and 7. And it is this community celebration where people just come out, bring their kids and a football and their lawn chairs. This acoustic trio was playing all these, you would have loved it, Pat. It was all these old songs like Simon and Garfunkel and the Beatles.
Only open the one day. It was, here's my business plan that never was. There's this hall in Tilden that gets used for weddings and receptions and things, but it frequently goes out of business as it changes owners. I wanted to buy it and have it just open on Saturday nights. There'd always be a band there, and it was going to be called The Reception. And it was just going to be like going to a wedding reception on any given Saturday. There'd be polka dancing. There'd be a roasted chicken. There'd be cake. I think there's a niche for that, where you just get away once a week, you know, you go to the reception and it's the only time you have to clean up the kitchen. I could go
definitely.
That.
That's a, yeah. Can you? No can do.
No can do.
It's a labor of love. You're not going to make any money doing that, but you're going to love doing it.
We'll be back with more of Kristen Lyerly after this. You're up north. Back down a Wednesday morning, Up North News. Pat Kreitlow, Luke Mathers, Kristen Lyerly, all here. Now, I was going to ask Kristen about student loan debt forgiveness, and you know what that's like for people, and what her own boys, you know, think of that as they move into that phase of life potentially. But of course, we started talking about other collegiate things and watching MTV back in the days when MTV was MTV. It actually showed music videos, and you could watch that. And I think younger people would look at us like we, you know, had an extra appendage or something coming out of our head that, you know, like a space alien, that you would just sit and watch music videos all day. But yeah, we did.
Although my kids will sit and watch like little short TikTok videos or videos that people make of their cats. Or
yeah, I suppose that is. Yeah, that is kind of the MTV of their generation is TikTok, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not nearly Duran Duran.
No. I mean, for a couple of my grandsons, it's Minecraft videos. And I've watched them play Minecraft, and they're always like, Grandpa, you want to learn? Like,
I love you, but.
Love you, but. I'm watching these, and I'm like, don't you want to go outside and play? You know, there's fresh air out there. Of course, they say that my windows are closed, and I'm locked in this room for, you know, most of the day and half of the night.
I don't get it, though, because you're right. They watch videos of other people watching videos
mm-hmm.
or playing games. Yep. Like we went to Lollapalooza a couple of years ago and Ninja was playing. What does Ninja play? Not Minecraft. Fortnite. Ninja was playing. Luke is like, I don't know. Cause I'm a
look at that. So we're just all like looking at like a cocker spaniel over here. What?
I don't know.
I think so we're all standing there.
That sounds right, though. It sounds right.
I think it's Fortnite. We're all standing there waiting for the band to come up, and there are these two huge screens on either side of the stage, and all of a sudden, it starts showing Fortnite, and the crowd goes wild, and I'm like, what's happening? I don't understand. And my son, who was like 20 at the time, was like, Mom, it's Ninja, and he's playing Fortnite. He's backstage. This is fantastic, and everybody was really excited about it, and I'm like,
they're watching him play a game backstage, and they're excited about it. I mean, if he'd pulled a board and they showed that, would they be cheering as well? What is this?
I didn't get it, but when they cheered, I cheered because that just felt right.
I would like. I mean, wouldn't it be great to hijack that? And instead, you know, Fortnite comes off, and the next thing they hear is do 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 do. And just classic Mario Brothers comes up, and a couple of us old people come out, you know, who still know how to jump off of the mushrooms and off of the little boxes, and that's it. That is now the end of our video game experience.
I thought you were going to go back to Pong.
Well, I was about to. Yes, I was about to tell you, as somebody who was old enough to remember when Pong came out, and I cannot emphasize enough how mind-blowing it was that something besides, you know, a picture from a camera was on your TV screen. It was just two vertical lines and a dot, but it was something, you know, and you controlled it. You controlled something that was on TV. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, so great that you indulge me on these stories. It's
I'm here for you, Pat.
It's nice to be here at the home, quite literally. But anyway, returning back to student loan debt, we talked a minute ago about how the ways that this election cycle is different compared to 4 years ago. And one of the differences comes in all the things that have been accomplished, like the Inflation Reduction Act and the American Rescue Plan, and Governor Evers actually putting forward plans for schools. And student loan debt forgiveness is one of them. And I know that Republicans have tried, and I think they will continue to try, to actually turn that around and make it a negative issue that helps Republicans by saying, you know, oh, you had your loans forgiven. And we've already talked about the hypocrisy that comes with it. But I just want to know your own guess as to whether in the end, will we look back on this fall's election and say, you know, a lot of people that really resonated with them, that they liked the student loan forgiveness, or will we look back and go, wow, that really came back to bite Democrats in the end?
I am not in the business of predicting things because everything is so unpredictable right now. But, you know, you mentioned that you've already talked about the hypocrisy of this, and I'd like to just talk about it a little bit more because I don't think you can say it enough. I loved that the White House came out with that series of tweets that highlighted all of the people who took PPP and had loans forgiven for tens of thousands of dollars. And to turn it around to regular people, because it's the regular people who don't have a voice and don't feel like they can make any change and have lost hope in the system. It's these people who elected Trump. It's these people who are going to make a difference, hopefully, in the future. These hopefully are the people too who are going to benefit from this loan forgiveness, which, let's be honest, I mean, $10,000 is a lot of money for some, but it is not a lot of money for people like Tim Michaels. So for the people that will benefit from this, like my kids' friends, they are over the moon. They're ecstatic because it gives them an opportunity to start their lives out in a less desperate way than they thought they were going to be facing.
Well, and it is such a, it's a big deal to a lot of people with crushing student loan debt. And it is so small compared to, you know, the benefits that are given to entire industries, you know, oil and gas industry, anything else with multi-million dollar lobbyists and the things that they get, that you're right. You now have a generation that has heard this drumbeat of, oh, government doesn't work, government is broken. And they are now seeing, actually, government does work, can work, when you put leaders in charge of it, not politicians, but leaders who are focused on quality of life issues and getting people an education that's affordable and attainable, maybe keeping them safe. We had the first gun safety laws passed in about 30 years. You know, so there are ways that people can decide their vote while seeing some of the positive actions that can take place with leadership rather than the same old opposing everything and having nothing new to propose yourself.
It's really true. And let's not forget, and I know we've talked about this before, but it is the leaders who preceded these leaders, and some of them are the same leaders because they've been in office for so long, that created the student loan debt issue in the first place. Because when I went to school 30 years ago, I could afford to go to school. Tuition wasn't as expensive. The rates on student loans weren't nearly as high as they are now. It was, and there wasn't this industry of fake education to take advantage of people. So it was that generation of leaders that really put a bunch of young, vulnerable people in these unwinnable situations. It's nice to see some sort of recognition that we're going to be headed in a different direction, hopefully.
Yeah, one would hope so, because the fact that we're still fighting over, you know, whether kids can get school lunch or, you know, can't afford that. That's a step we should have put in our rearview mirror long ago. And so let's go past school lunches and move into an actual affordable higher education. Kristen Lyerly is with us. This is Up North News. We'll be back. 2 margarita, 3 margarita.